Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 20th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday morning, all rainy and everything, but we're up early and we're having a good time. It's my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, bud? At least I'm having a good time.
I'm good.
It's dry. And I'm inside. It's wet outside, and I'm dry inside, so I'm good. How you doing, man?
Well, I had a long run yesterday, so I guess I just need to recover today. So I'll just accept the fact that it's raining, but I'm not happy about it. I actually have been getting my mileage up pretty high because of this lockout situation and the fact that I can't go to the gym. And did a half marathon yesterday and was looking forward to getting back out there, but I don't know. I'll just wait till tomorrow and run another long run and take the train home from somewhere, wherever I end up. And that's how I'm getting through this lockdown situation.
Okay. We've been doing a lot of walks. I wasn't able to do one yesterday. The wife and I have been going down to Zenbukuji-gawa in Suginami Ward and doing about a 2 hour round trip, 2.5 hours.
Oh,
and,
that's nice.
But she's studying now. So it conflicts with her schedule. It used to only be mine. the funniest thing is because she's studying that she's taking an online course right now and she's sitting there scratching away at her notebook and listening to on the headphones for about 8 hours. And it used to be just me. I was the one who was like working. It's like, leave me alone and don't get in my line of sight and don't disturb me when I'm writing a story. And now she's the one. And I was off that day and I'm like tiptoeing around like, I don't want to mess her up.
Right.
It's like, it was a good lesson.
I sent the family to the in-laws because the stress was unbearable. So I sent them away. So I'm alone and I'm back to single life, so to speak, of having to do all the cooking and cleaning and laundry and ugh. I need a maid.
I was going to say that's different from what I do. How?
I need a maid, dude. I'm not used to doing this stuff anymore. So you've got to do what you got to do. And again, a big thanks to the healthcare workers. Keep up the fight.
Yes.
We really appreciate what you guys are doing. And I know the numbers are going up here in Tokyo in terms of infected coronavirus people, but I guess it's going to get worse here before it gets better. So, keep charging ahead as we will do on this podcast. The work that they're doing is much more important than the podcast. But of course, we had the listeners ask us to keep going. And so we will push and fight and charge ahead as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fighting here from the living room sofa. So I'm with all these people
right.
in spirit and not in no other sense.
Okay. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with longtime Swallow Slugger and now Hawks new addition, Vladimir Coco Ballantine. And we've got notes and we've got some high quality, high heat. So let's start swinging. All right, so Coco basically needs no introduction. He broke Sadaharu Oh's home run record. Oh hit his 55 home runs in 1964, and it was 2013 when Coco Ballantine hit 60 blasts with the Yakult Swallows. He was a slugging prospect with the Seattle Mariners, eventually went to the Reds, and then came to Japan. Everybody knows his story. He came to Japan 2011. 12 and 13, he was the home run king, and he's always been in the. I shouldn't say always because he had the one bad season. I think, well, he was injured most of 2015.
He was injured 1 year, yeah.
Right. And is usually in the home run race. He played against the Hawks in the 2015 Japan Series, but he had missed most of that season, so was barely able to get to the batter's box, basically, and didn't have a good series, but the team wanted him to play, so he played. And now in the offseason, he has moved to the Hawks. And with the Swallows, they finished in last place 4 times during his 9 seasons there. So, the one trip to the Japan Series was, 5 games. They got pretty much slapped around by the Hawks. But he had Coco had 33 home runs in 120 games last season with Yakult. And you'll hear why he left and how long he wants to play and what Hawks player has impressed him so far. So let's take a listen. All right, I'm glad to be joined by Vladimir Coco Ballantin of the SoftBank Hawks. Wow, that sounds strange.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Maybe you get used to see you've been used to say Tokyo Yakult Swallows, huh?
Yeah, you too. And wearing the uniform. So first of all, how are you and how's your family?
Oh man, you know, so far we good because, you know, we safe. But at the same time, it's hard because, like, you know, being so we away in quarantine, my family is almost like 30 something days in quarantine, and it's, I don't even know when I'll be able to see them again. So on that part, it's kind of hard, but we just, thanks God, we good and safe.
Good. Well, now how are you with the injuries now too? It looked like when the spring training games were taking place, you look pretty healthy to me.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was healthy this year, man, and my body was feeling good. Like, I was feeling brand new, and things was going very well until, like, you know, for all those reasons, we had to cancel everything. But thanks God, I'm feeling great, man. Healthy, and I was ready for a new season.
Okay. Well, we spoke last year, and I know you were joking, but you talked about maybe the Central League could have the DH, and you could stay with the Swallows. But how did you end up landing in Fukuoka with the always winning Hawks?
That's crazy, you know, because, like, you know, when season finished, you know, I know I was gonna be a free agent, and I was gonna be a Japanese, so I was be able to negotiate with all 12 teams and stuff like that.
Right.
And you know, it's not too much as a DH because over here I'm gonna play left field anyway because we still have this spine. So the decision was not the DH. It was more like the opportunity that show up. And SoftBank really was interested in me because, like I said, it's hard because, like, I never talk about it, but, like, all my fans are saying, like, I leave because more money and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it was not about the money, and it wasn't about, you know, it was about they really want me here, and I wasn't getting the offer that I think I respect by the Swallows, and they end up saying probably I'm getting old, so maybe I won't be helpful for them. So
right,
that's why I end up here, and I'm glad. And since day first, the Hawks were showing interested in me. They called me and stuff like that. So they really show that they really want me here. So that's all that matters. It doesn't matter about the money. It's just matter about where they want you and you know, and you be able to play the game you love, and they are a great team. So now I have opportunity to at least win one, two, or maybe three titles before I retire.
Oh, how long you plan on playing, man?
Well, I have a 2-year deal with them, and I have a third year option, and I hope I can at least play another, after my contract over, another 2 more years. Because, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, they have the DH here, so probably by then I'll be able to play DH and still get a couple more years in and just play the game I love.
And, yeah, like you said, the Hawks win a lot, but that means there's a lot of competition for playing time. So how did you approach signing with them knowing that you have to compete for a spot like that?
No, man. I mean, that was the whole that part make it so easy because you know, when they first contact me, it wasn't no competition. It was like you going to, you know, you're gonna be our left field. You're gonna play every day, and once in a while you can get some DH in, but it's no competition. We are one team, and all we're gonna do is play together and whatever it takes. It take to win, we do it here. So, I mean, that was not the plan when I first signed. I have to compete, but if I have to adjust myself or do anything I have to do, if I have to sit out one game, two games, and to help us win, I will do that because at the end of the day, it's a team, and all that matters is how much you win. It's not what you do individual.
Right. Yep. That I know. So you were with the Swallows for so many years. What was it? 9 years?
9 years.
9 years. Now you're with SoftBank. What differences have you seen between the organizations in the short time that you've been with SoftBank?
It's a big difference here because, like I said, here they are a winning team, and it's a lot of veterans here.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, it's a way different situation because, like in Swallows, we had a lot of young players. So at the end of the day, you know, everything is like on the pressure. Everything you do has to be like pressure because it's a lot of young players. And as you begin a young player, it's hard for you to enjoy the game and play at the same time. All you got to do is try to play the harder you can. And sometimes if you're not enjoying the game, you try so hard, it's not going to work out, you know? And that's why I'm feeling over here, as you, because it's so veteran guys, they know how to win. They win, so they just enjoy the game. You know, they just enjoy it. And just the short time I have been here, the games we play, I see how even young guys come in and they just enjoy the game. And we be winning games. Like, I'm like, we in spring training. Hold on, guys. And it's just like, doesn't matter. It's spring training. And it just, that's the mentality. And that's how they play. It doesn't matter where we are. Just win ball games.
Yeah, that's what I often said about the Giants. They really work hard at the culture of winning and the mentality of trying to win games. It doesn't matter if it counts or if it doesn't count. You want to win. So I noticed I think it was in some February. It seems like so long ago with the coronavirus problems, but maybe
yeah,
late February or early March, I saw some video footage. You're doing some core work, you know, some sit-ups and stuff, and you weren't very enthusiastic about it. How's that regimen? How's the work program that you do over there with SoftBank?
Man, you know, I was putting some work in because at the end of the day, when I first get here, the way they receive me, the way they talk to me, they put everything in my hands, and they was like, you know, we know you're a veteran. We're not gonna push you. You gotta do what you gotta do. But at the end of the day, I mean, I see all those guys doing it, so I don't want to be the one that just come in and do different thing. Right. I just want to try to do whatever I can to just be part of the team. You know, I just want to get connectics, and I don't want the players think like, oh, Balanchine coming here and he's doing whatever he do. He's on his own routine, and I just want to, you know, be a part. Feel like I'm part of the group, so I was just putting work in, and at the same time, it was helping me get my body stronger too because I was feeling good.
Okay, now you talked about some of the other veterans and some of the stars on that team, but who is a guy who was better than you thought? You know, you saw him play before, but he's better than you thought when you see him every day.
I have to go with Machi, with Matsuda. You know, because it's crazy how, like, I play against him, and I know he's a veteran, and I know he's like an electric player. He's always been screaming and hustle the game and play the game the way he has to be playing.
Right.
But I was surprised with him because when I first get here, I know he's been here for so long, has a great career, and I was watching him, and I was like, wow, how this guy practice every day like he's a rookie, you know. He do everything like he's a rookie, like it's his first year in the league. He's running. I mean, he never say no. He always do everything 100%. And I was like, damn, how he do it? He's like 36, 37, and he's still doing like he's 21. So that catch my attention, you know.
Hey, you know, go hard or go home.
Yeah, but you know, like when it come to a point, like, you see a lot of veterans that really don't go that way because I'm not gonna say name, but I play with some other guys that, you know, that they know they have been a long time in the league. They are veterans and they just take their time, they pace and all that stuff. But now, man, he since first day he was in the lineup and stuff like that. I was like, damn, Machi.
Well, good.
You know.
Good, good. I like to see that. That's good to hear. Now, you were having a pretty good preseason, I thought, when everything stopped. What was going well for you?
Man, you know what? Everything was working hard, but I think the most thing that really like caught me and that put me like gave me more motivation is like when I get told that I'm getting too old, probably I won't be the same hitter, I won't be able to hit, and you know, I just take those things and just use them as a motivation, and then you know, they can see that they was wrong and that I'm still be able to do what I do. So I think all those negative things, you just take them as a motivation and you turn things around, and thanks God everything was going well, man, and until this happened.
Yeah, I mean, how was your I always hear a lot of guys talking about getting their swing going, but your swing, at least you were making really good contact. How was your swing going?
I was great, man. I was ready for the season. I mean, I can tell you that it's all that work I put in spring training, because like we work hard over here. So I think all that work I put in helped my body, you know, adjust himself. And I think every time you feel healthy, your body feel great, everything just follow him. I think that was the point. And my swing just follow my body, and it was in great shape, man.
Yeah, so you were in great shape. Now we've got this stoppage, and we don't know when or if there's going to be a season. So how do you stay in shape every day?
You know, it's hard right now because...
Oh, I know. I know.
Yeah, it's crazy because even if you go to the field, you limit to do stuff, you know, because you're not able to have contact with other players, no coaches. No BP, nobody can have contact with you. None of them can be throwing you, so you have to do almost basically everything on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So probably you have a player throw to you, and it's not the same. You know, because when you get used to something and then you have to change it because somebody else is going to throw to you, it's not the same. And then, you know, all those kind of things. So it's very hard right now. It's a hard situation we're going through right now to keep all your swing together and stuff, but I mean, as keeping my body healthy, all I did was I buy myself a bicycle and some weights, and I just set up my little weight training room here in my apartment,
mm-hmm.
and I just try to, you know, get some work in here, and once or twice a week, I just go to the field and try to get some tea and stuff to just have that feeling of the swing, but... I mean, it's crazy, man. It's going to take at least another month for us to get ready again for the season, because if they say we're going to play again, I don't know, if they say probably in June, we probably need the whole month of June at least to get ourselves everybody to get themselves in shape again, and then probably be ready to play in July. Right. And then I don't know how many games we're going to play in July, because it'll be July, August, September, and the season's going to be over, so, you know.
Yeah, I know. You know, who's going to have the advantage after this long layoff? Would the pitchers or the hitters have the advantage?
Man, it's hard, man. It's hard because, like, I don't know, because right now those guys practicing in group, so I haven't seen the pitcher, like, for I think I have a month already that I haven't seen my teammates. Some of them, because we practice in groups. Some practice at 8 in the morning and stuff like that. So when I go in, like, twice a week, I go in around 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Right.
Most of them already gone. So I think I don't know how the pitchers getting themselves work in if they are able to throw their bullpen and stuff. But I think it's gonna be hard for us as a hitter for sure, because you know, you see pitcher, then we off like for a month, maybe 2 months. I don't know how long is this gonna take. So it's gonna be hard for us as a hitter to, you know, to get it going. And I think probably the pitcher has an advance over us.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, have you gotten any idea if there's going to be a season? They keep trying to push the starting date back, but has your team told you anything?
Yeah, we haven't hear anything. You know that. You know how the MPB or they try to hide everything. Like they know we wasn't able to play, and so they was like try to move it two weeks early when the when all this started going on. But they know we was not able to do anything.
Right.
So now they say we probably gonna go like next month, but. With the situation going on right now, it's hard to play next month, because even if they trying to think we can do like we can start the season with no fans like we was doing the spring training game,
mm-hmm.
I think it's not safe enough, because we still have to get on the plane, we still have to take Shinkansen, we still have to be moving around, and you never know those places, someone that was in fact can be there, and then so it's hard. I mean, I know they tried to do season, but at the end of the day, I think the safety from all of us first, because I mean it will be tough to be travel around if we still have some issue going on with the coronavirus.
Yep. Well, thank you for your time, man. Stay safe. We appreciate you coming on, and keep practicing, and we'll keep praying for normalcy, and that includes sports, but it doesn't start with sports.
Yeah, I know. I mean, at this point, it's health first. It's we have to take care of us first, and then everything comes out, because if we're not healthy, we will not be able to do anything. So I think we all have to think about that first, like think about our health first, and then everything comes second.
Yep. All right, man. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking your time.
All right, man. I appreciate you, brother. Anytime.
All right. Thanks again, Coco. He was off that day and was at home, and he was willing to talk. And again, this is his second or third language, English. I guess it's his second language, but I'm always impressed with his language skills, and sounds really good. And he had a lot to say in this. So what rolled around in the Jim Allen noggin after hearing this one?
Well, thank you for calling it a noggin. I've heard worse. It was great to hear you, Coco. And I'll tell you, first of all, the bit about the interview, I know John was trying to reach out to a lot of players. I've also been trying, but I'm like stuck on contact right now. I'm waiting for people to send me contact information. So if you're listening, you know who you are.
Yes.
And John was all set to go with one guy, and that fell through. And the guy who picked up the ball, and there's an irony in that some people may understand, that it was Coco Ballantyne. And I'll just leave it at that. It's not an irony that cast aspersions on anybody. It's just a funny twist that one person dropped it and one person picked it up, and the guy who picked it up was Coco. The interview went something like a pinball. It was like just careening around the table, but hitting all the targets. I mean, it was like, how is this thing? How is he still going? It's like normally we gotta, some guy gets on something and they hide it a little bit and then they cover it up and they cover their tracks and they go on to something and they think they're, well, I don't know, they're trying to spread as many cliches on that piece of toast as
right,
they can.
Right.
But this was, and that's what I kind of expected, because Coco's as good as that as anybody. It is what it is. And
yeah, lay it on thick. Lay it on thick.
No, man. Well, he laid it on thick, but it was all content. I loved it. And okay, I'm going to run down my list of things, and then I guess we're going to pick them up and talk about them in order, and you can add stuff. So I've got 6 points I thought were really interesting.
Wow, look at you doing homework. I love it.
The first part, the most interesting, and they're not in chronological order, but teamwork when you can't be with your team.
Mm.
Two, it isn't about the money. It's, of course, when people say it isn't about the money, that usually means it is about the money, but we'll get on to that. Playing until he's 40. Now, assuming that assumes that he's not counting that option year.
Uh-huh.
As his third, as part of the deal, a 2-year contract and then two more. I mean, if he's counting the option, then we're talking about 41. So that's getting into Ichiro territory. Number four, there's pressure and then there's pressure. Between, talking about the Hawks and fun and pressure and so
gotcha,
on.
Yes.
And number 5 is Machi, Nobuhiro Matsuda, which was when you asked the question, the answer came out of my mouth.
Oh, really? The same
before
answer?
Before he said it. Yes. I mean, it's like, I'm going, damn, dude, how can I get... And it was his reason was not quite the same because our perspectives are different.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
If you've seen Nobuhiro Matsuda practice, then on a practice day as opposed to a pregame, you really... It's something. Okay, and the last part is NPB and the suspension of disbelief. Now, I'm going to hit these points and just really quickly.
Oh, what you said I was supposed to jump in, so I don't know where I was supposed to jump.
Okay,
in.
Anything else besides those that you...
No, I mean, you got my two... I mean, I was lost as to what to get into, but I'll wait for you to go.
Okay, I want to just
said
go
you,
through
you were going to have me jump in.
I'm going to now hit them in slightly more detail a little bit, and then maybe we can chime in that way. Okay. Okay, first part, yeah, the biggest thing for me, the coolest thing was how they manage the practice when they're supposed to not be interacting.
Okay.
To me, that his perspective on that was just quality. It was a beautiful picture. You know, how do I know what my teammates are doing? I can't see them. We're not allowed to go within shouting distance. We're not allowed to play catch or do this or do that. And that was just quality stuff.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it's a mystery as to what this baseball, if they are allowed to get back together and we have a season and they say, okay, we're targeting this date. And if it all goes well, we'll play on this date. What is it going to look like? How are they going to get back? And do you want to actually, you know, hug your teammates and high five them and do all the things you used to do? When you know there's still a chance there could be an infected person out there somewhere. Mm. So yeah, that is interesting. Okay. Do go
okay,
on.
Now again, when somebody, there's an old saying, when someone says it's not about the money, it's about the money.
Uh-huh.
You know, you've heard that.
I've heard that.
But in baseball, you know, when it's a choice between a whole lot of money that the rest of us can't really imagine, and an unbelievable amount of money, the kind that, you know, the SoftBank Hawks throw around, then it's, I mean, I'm sure that whatever Yakult was going to offer him was not going to put him in the poorhouse.
Right.
It's not going to lower his standard of living.
Right.
So what I mean is, okay, it's not, so I'm guessing, let's say just for ballpark figures, Saul's going to say, okay, we'll give you $2 million a year. And the Hawks are going to say, we'll give you $5 million a year. It's more of an expression of sentiment. The Swallows saying, no, we think this is actually what you're worth. And the Hawks saying, well, we don't care what you're worth. We want you to come here.
Okay.
You know, and so it's more about how they regard him. Because obviously if they're going to pay, I don't know what his contract is, but I'm saying if they're going to give you 6 times more, then okay. It's not – money has value in that respect. And I'm not saying it's only about the money.
Sure.
Because I know it's not quite true. When you get past a certain level, it's more like, you know, when you get to the Coco Valentine, $2 million is a slap in the face here region.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there is something about the money in there, but it's not like it is to the rest of us.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, it was 2013 when he had 60 home runs, breaking the MPB single season record for home runs. And then I pointed out, I think it was in the PL prediction show, that he's the only import player to have at least 8 seasons with 30 or more home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that was one of the things that stuck out with me. I mean, I couldn't pick. I was having trouble picking, so I'm glad you had your list of 6 there. And he talked about the fact that it wasn't the money, and I thought, okay, well, I thought the same thing. A lot of times when you hear that phrase, that it really can be about the money if it's a whole bunch. But again, we don't get the exact numbers and figures that these players are actually dealing with. We only get what's released to the media, and that's not always an accurate characterization of the amounts of money that are being thrown around. Is that a good way to explain it? So I think it was partly about the money, but I thought it was also maybe heavily about the respect as a veteran who has had that kind of success. And Yakult maybe didn't value him. Just like he said, he's past 30. He's going to turn 36. I think his birthday is July. Let me check here.
It is.
It is. It's in July. So he's going to turn 36 in July. If you feel like you have a lot to give the team and you've been productive and the team knows basically what it can expect if you're healthy, then you want a certain figure. And I don't think he heard the numbers that from Yakult that made him want to stay. And then when these numbers came, and you also heard him about the fact, I'm glad I was able to ask about the competition that he was going to have with getting playing time. And he said, no, they said you're going to go and play left field. So he had a guaranteed spot. He had more money. And what he said was he had a team that wanted it. It was like, you know, I kept thinking about the Cheap Trick song from, I guess it was the 80s. I hope it was the 80s. It might have been the late 70s, but I Want You to Want Me.
Okay. Wow. You picked a Cheap Trick song I would have actually heard.
Yeah. And I think when they pursued him the way they pursued him with the money, with the fact that he was going to have a spot, I think players respond to that. And, you know, I think staying in Tokyo would have been a really easy thing to do. It's a big adjustment to go to Fukuoka. I mean, you know, I lived in Nagoya for a long time. I came to Tokyo and was overwhelmed a little bit at the size. And I've come to enjoy life in Tokyo, but to move from Tokyo to a place like Fukuoka, which is a lovely city, very similar to Nagoya, big life adjustment. So I think he would have been fine staying here for the right money and for lesser of a contract. But you also throw in the opportunity to win and do what you want. And you heard him refer to the game I love two or three times in there. So
we can't get away with no cliches.
Yeah, lay it on.
I mean, God, you know, he's got a contractual obligation, you know,
as a baseball, as an athlete, right?
as a, the interviewee on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, I think it's required to have to throw him out there.
but
play him one at a time, babe.
Yep. And then so that's funny. I'm curious as to I asked him for the player who was better than you thought, and he gave me the player who surprised him. So I'm not sure he answered the question, but it was an interesting response. And Matsuda, to me, I love, you know, there's a thing going around with the internet or Facebook or some social media thing with the Atsuo thing that he yells with after he hits home runs, and some of the players are doing their own versions of it. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
I have been blissfully ignorant.
Oh, okay. So, you know, lots of players are doing variations of his Atsuo.
Do they dance on one foot too? Turn in a circle.
Yeah, it was Masataka Yoshida of the Oryx Buffaloes.
Oh, okay. Not the Hawks guys. That's why I thought that would have been.
No, the various players. Yeah, from okay. And athletes from I've seen mostly baseball players, but I think
to do that properly, you need to have like as much coffee as I drink in a day, like before you do it.
Well,
you got to have that kind of glassy-eyed stare.
You've got to define properly, though. Yeah.
Glassy-eyed stare is probably a poor way of putting wide-eyed, maniacal stare. That is not this calling card.
But
he's just full energy.
He's just an energy ball. So that was cool. And I those were the the things that I want to talk about, or that really stuck out with me among a lot of things. And like you said, trying to work with teammates when you can't work with teammates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matsuda's, you know, it's funny because he's not a big guy, but he is bigger than life.
Mm.
And when I the first time I ever watched him do a practice was in that 2015 Japan series. The Hawks came and practiced at night.
Mm-hmm.
For night games, they were scheduled to practice in the afternoon, but they told the Swallows, can we practice at night? We're going to play here at night. And we didn't play here this year, so let's do it. So I went there, and I would have missed it otherwise because of the Sawamura press conference earlier in the day.
Mm.
But the thing was this, was he was – he's like shouting. He shouts a lot in practice. You don't see that in the pregame, you know, when they're the visitors. And maybe they do it at home. I haven't seen their home practices in a while. I've been down to Fukuoka in a since 2016 or 17. But in their home, when they were on the road in the stadium by themselves, he shouts a lot, you know, and he's like, ah, ah, and it's just wild. And he has some unique, he has his, one of the things he was doing was hitting, he and Yuki and Nagito was doing it also. They were hitting toss batting, but trying to hit them out of the ballpark. On the sidelines. They were shooting them down the foul lines and trying to hit, you know, reach the seats and shouting when they did it, of course, especially. And Matsuda wasn't going to let anybody shout louder than he does. Yeah. He's got some lungs on him. Anyway, so just a quick touch on the next thing is playing until 40 was, you know, if, as I said, he could mean 41 and he could mean 40. He's a little ambiguous about that. And it depends on the option. Now, here's the thing. Now, in the last 3 years, he's played more games than in any other 3-year stretch in his career, which doesn't seem plausible, but it is. It's like 387. And it's more than his first 3 years by a small number, you know. So playing until 40 is, well, you, I mean, you look at his body and you look at his history of injury and you think it's improbable. But he is an athlete by definition, and his job is a constant battle. Well, I mean, I say that because I mean that's his job. I mean, his job as an athlete, his job is a constant battle against what. Against expectations, yours and others, mm-hmm. and you're trying to improve what you can do.
Okay.
You can't do anything else about anyone else. So you can't do anything about the others. So you go in and you prepare yourself and you do your job. So who knows, you know, maybe he's got it in him. Maybe he doesn't, but you know, if he gives it a shot, I'm not going to rule it out. It's improbable, but it's possible.
Well, yeah, and I'm looking at his games played over his career here in Japan, and I just remember the young guy used to try to get to every ball and fire it as hard as he could to show off the arm, and we just haven't seen that the past 3 seasons. We've seen a guy who is using his head.
Okay, and then the next thing, which I was a little confused about, he was talking about how I wasn't confused as much. It seems like we were talking out of different frames of references when he said that the Swallows players felt pressure because they were young.
Oh yeah, well I totally got that. Like a guy I didn't think you were saying that they felt pressure so much that he said they didn't have time to enjoy the game.
Okay.
And so. Of course, you have pressure to produce if you come up as a young player. That's natural. And you have pressure to produce if you're a veteran player. Mm-hmm. But what I took away from it was after you've been playing for a while, the game is just the game. And you go out and you play and you enjoy it. But when you're a young player, there's so much coming at you that's new that you don't have time to sit back and say, oh, you know, I really enjoy playing baseball. It's all about producing and making a name for yourself. And that's where the pressure comes. That's how I took it.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of got that. And then the interesting thing was, because obviously, you know, I've talked about it before, when I did the thing about swinging strikes, the third strikes, people were called out looking and saw that first year players get an unusual number of called third strikes. An unusually low number of called third strikes. So basically, they're not going to take borderline pitches when they've got two strikes. Even though they think it's a ball, they're going to swing at it because they're trying not to strike out because it will disqualify them and send them back to the minors.
Right.
Okay. So I think there's that. But, you know, you mentioned the Giants and the Hawks as examples. And I think there's truth to that because especially with the Giants and the Hawks, there's an expectation that winning is required.
Mm-hmm.
And And having said that, it's a difference between the Giants and the Hawks is the Hawks haven't had a downturn in recent years.
Right.
And the Giants, and I remember when, was it 2017, when they had the team record losing streak?
Yeah, right, team yes, had yes.
The franchise record losing streak. And the players and, you know, the coaches and the manager were all positive, I mean, the players told me. But the parent company Cockroaches were coming out of the woodwork and reminding them that their losses were costing them subscribers to the newspaper. And they were belittling the players' effort because of the subscription numbers. So I think I'm not certain the Giants and the Hawks are kind of
raid
kind of in the same boat there, but we don't know because the Hawks, you know, I don't know what if they have a franchise record losing streak this year that Masayoshi Son will come down and say, guys, don't you realize I lost $32 billion this year?
Wow.
Nice. Okay, so there's that. Now the other one is the last one is the bit about again, second time when you talked about the delays to the start of the season, I practically answered for Coco because I didn't expect this time wasn't a case I didn't expect him to say exactly what he meant, because that's usually not players' jobs.
Right.
NPV doesn't tell you the truth, you know, like I loved it. I mean, I'm going, yeah, well, my thought is, of course, that, you know, honest, when if you find an organization that's run by rich people and big businesses or a government that's honest, if you find one, kill it, shoot it, stuff it, and preserve it as evidence, because I guarantee you no one has ever seen one before.
Hashtag.
So go for that. But yeah, the whole schedule thing has been perfect characteristic reason for him saying that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's perfect. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the schedule. But thanks again, Coco, for taking the time, man. I really appreciate
absolutely.
It. Loved hearing you. Can't wait to see you.
We'll be expecting that kind of unambiguous, tell it like it is now for the rest of your career. So you may want to shut that down.
Yeah, the new standard. All right. So, yes, on Friday, NPB announced there would be no interleague session. And so there's no surprise there. And the league also said it was working toward a schedule that would start no earlier than June. But they were kind of ambiguous and intentionally, I think. And then I also opened a report up this morning to check. And I saw that they're looking at a 125-game season amid all this coronavirus pandemic that's happening. So, as Coco said, yeah, they're pushing it back little by little, trying to keep everybody going. And I think it's a carrot stick situation because they want the players to be ready when there is a season. And I'm not sure. I saw someone actually on the news break down the whole schedule as it normally is. So the players kind of start to work out, let's say December, especially players in Japan. Maybe some of them are playing in the fall league or fall baseball.
Or and winter then, league overseas, yeah.
And winter league overseas. And then, you know, by December, they're starting to really train a lot. And then you see a lot of, in January, you see a lot of the players on TV and it says, you know, they've started doing workouts and they made themselves available to the media for these workouts. And then they get ready, they go to camp, they gear up, they start working on specific things. They start playing in the spring training games, and then, you know, late March and in April, they start playing games. And to have this all set aside and stopped and halted. And not only that, as Coco pointed out, you really can't even play a game of catch with anybody without, you know, really setting it up. And there's only certain times that he can go to the ballpark. And amid all this, like I said, it's a carrot and stick situation. You want players to kind of be ready so that if there's a go time, then they can start to do something that is, you know, a semblance of baseball and get ready and maybe have some kind of a season. But it's really difficult, and NPB is just putting the carrot in front of the players and saying, okay, well, you know, get ready. But they keep moving it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it's going to be because no one knows. So I think, you know, the more and more I hear about, we talked to Spencer Patton last week, we talked to Coco this week, I think the players are more inclined to sit around than to work really hard because they really don't have a target.
And also they haven't been playing a lot. So now they're, you know, they're essentially going back to the start of spring training. In a sense, though, they may be in slightly better shape for some of them, but others not, because a lot of these guys are doing their unrequired free training. Often, of course, the free training takes place wearing your number, jogging around the outfield track with your teammates while the coaches watch from the bench. And that hasn't been happening. So it's, in some respects, they'll probably be in worse shape than they are on the first day of camp.
Definitely, definitely.
The foreign players, some of them perhaps not as much, but for the Japanese guys, I would think a lot of the young guys are probably, unless they're guys who, like Yasunobu Kugawa, the Yakult Swallows first-round draft pick, who hurt himself in the aforementioned unscheduled, unstructured, but supervised preseason
run around
pre-spring training. Mm-hmm. So those guys, a few of them will be in better shape, but a lot of them won't be. So it's really a good question of the, you know, for the trainers. And actually, I wanted to ask a friend of mine in America about that, but we didn't get on to the subject. Yeah, so when they're going to start is a good question, but I think why they're doing it is probably less of an incentive to the players, and as much as it is just the belief when they started that they would be in control, that they knew the situation.
Right.
You know, we're going to start our season. Well, and there's actually, I think that's harsh. That's too harsh. I think there's three parts to it. One is nobody knows. Two, they're used to setting, they're all about setting schedules and dates. That's what these guys do.
Mm-hmm.
They sit around, they agree, okay, this is the date the season's going to start, and bingo, it starts like magic. You know, and pretty much that's
corporate magic
every year. So they're very accustomed just saying it's going to happen, and it happens. And so, of course, when the season was delayed, their first response was, okay, well, we'll just start it on April 10th. And then they said, wait, hold on, that's not working. Okay, now we're going to start it on April 24th. Absolutely April 24th. And then they said, okay, let's start after that, but we're not going to say when, but hopefully we're going to try for May. And now they're saying, we don't really know. Okay, so reality is kind of taking a bite out of their understanding of their power over the world.
Yeah, I thought part of it was just to keep the teams together and keep everybody thinking on the same track that they were going to be together and the season was going to go.
Because if you have MLB did, which was okay, you guys go home.
Yeah, because if you have everybody break up and go, you know, the separate ways, then how do you get them back and how do you get restarted quickly? And I think that was part of it. But
I don't think it's
who knows? You get that many smart,
because if they're doing, you know, if the practice is as Spencer Patton and Vladimir Valentin suggested, it ain't gonna matter that
it's not
at
it's
home
not.
Or not at home, because basically some of them are gonna be in, you know, they're gonna be going into retrograde. Just their body's gonna do it. You know, they're telling their body, you know, be active, and their body's going, I'm sitting on the sofa. I'm in sofa mode.
I have a theory about mode, but I'm in sofa mode.
Okay, so
yeah, I have a theory about too many smart guys making decisions and not thinking about the practical. Yes, and not thinking about the practical application of reality in life. But anyway,
yeah,
yeah,
So that's where we are. And the last thing I'd just throw in there was I was reading the Kyoto News story about it yesterday. And the story was basically saying nobody was quoted as saying this. They were saying we're going to try 125 because that's 143 full games minus 18 games of Interleague. Okay, 125. But the writer was saying, yeah, but nobody thinks 125 is really going to happen. Nobody was going to say that. So what I'm getting is people are telling them that off the record.
Yeah, or just someone threw a number out. Yeah.
So basically, everybody is pessimistic, but everybody, when the camera lights are on, they're saying, yes, 125, that's what we're going with. That's our story, and we're hoping to stick to it. Okay.
Right.
So that's my warning to you listeners is don't count on 125 as meaning anything other than the latest fallback position.
Right. Okay.
The next one to be an even number.
An even number. Okay. And making a two-seam transition, I want to talk about infection updates. So, and this is coronavirus infection updates. And in Tokyo on Friday, the number of confirmed cases topped 200 for the first time. So that happened. And during this past week, a longtime fighter star who played out his career with the Hanshin Tigers, Atsushi Kataoka, also became infected with the virus. And that was the latest shock from the baseball world. And he announced on social media, I don't know if it was Twitter or what he announced it on, but he made a video and said he had been in the hospital since April 8th with the virus. And you could see he was having trouble breathing and speaking. And I can't believe he's younger than I am. He's 51 and his birthday is next month. And he's a strong guy. I hope he recovers. But for him to do a video and him saying, just imploring people to just be safe, be safer than sorry, he said. So
that was really that hurt. And I'm very fond of both him and Masataka Nishida, the former longtime Pacific League manager who had pneumonia and who is now out of ICU.
Correct.
Yeah. I'm fond of these guys because when I was coming up, and these guys were people who would take me seriously, despite the fact, or at least pretend.
At least you thought so.
Yeah, exactly. I missed the devil's fingers behind my head when I wasn't looking, the peace sign, giving me that smart laughing at their teammates when I was looking away. I missed that part, but they treated me with a modicum of respect when I had earned nothing on the field as a nobody whose Japanese was really lousy, and Kataoka and Nishida both spent a lot of time talking to me. So I'm very fond of both of these guys, and I'm so glad to hear that. Well, and I'm very proud of Kataoka for playing that video of him in a very weakened, and I'll bet there was some people who would say, don't do that because it's bad for your image or something. But it hit home.
Especially now he's a TV analyst. He's a guy who's always sharp and looking on TV. And so, it does hit home when you do that. And, you like I said, you could see he was fighting the beast inside him, and we wish him the best. Obviously it's a tough.
Yeah. Tough, I could see tough. The talking. I mean, I can speak from experience. It's hard. Having had pneumonia once many, many years ago, that it's a battle.
Yeah. And so, yes, again, Nishida was moved out of ICU and into a regular room. And he was, according to the news, the NHK report I saw this morning, he was conscious and talking. So that's really good news. And we're real happy to say that.
The next good news, if we have from Nishida, is that they can't get him to stop talking.
Well, we'll just put him in the same room with you. That should take care of it.
Oh, man.
Hashtag high heat.
They would definitely get me out of there. They're saying, are you still talking? God, don't you ever shut up.
And with that, we'll go to fielding questions.
But where he keeps talking.
All right, so the first one comes from Dave, and I think he's in Baltimore. Dave, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong. Thanks a lot for the email. He says, Hope you and the family are keeping yourselves safe and well during all this. I've got a couple things I wanted to ask about, or I guess one is a question and the others are comments. First, the question. I know Jim always talks about the fourth round of the 1991 MPB draft being historic, as it had Ichiro, Tomoaki Kanemoto, Norihiro Nakamura, and Shinjiro Hiyama. How does he feel that stacks up against the first round of the 1968 draft, which featured five Hall of Famers: Hisashi Yamada, Koji Yamamoto, Senichi Hoshino, Osamu Higashio, and Koichi Tabuchi, as well as Golden Players Club members Michio Arito? Jim, what draft do you feel was the best overall? Best, of course, being difficult to define.
Okay, regarding the draft, Dave, you nailed it. By my measure, the greatest draft class in NPB history was the number one, the first round in 1968. We had the measure I use is win shares, developed by Bill James, and that had 2,096 for that, the 12 guys drafted that year. The Koji Yamamoto Hall of Famer, Hisashi Yamada Hall of Famer, Michio Arito should be in the Hall of Fame. It isn't because the reporters didn't like him when he was the Lotharians manager. Koichi Tobuchi just elected to the Hall of Fame. Osamu Higashio elected to the Hall of Fame. Senichi Hoshino elected to the Hall of Fame because he was a manager also. So really a great class. Now, number two, although I wouldn't have guessed it, was the 1991 fourth round with Ichiro Suzuki, Tomoaki Kanemoto, and Norihiro Nakamura, and a couple of other cast of regulars. It's kind of amazing because you consider that the fourth round draft choice is on average about less than half as valuable as the first round draft choice player
in
history. Yep.
Oh, yep. I mean, based on results
on averages
up to now?
Over the years, yes. So basically, okay. The average, because I remember you saying something about this, that it's a crapshoot, but the average
value. No, and that's a mischaracterization. What I said was, when you come into a team, it's not about where you were drafted, it's about what you do on the field.
Okay, this is absolutely
true. Sometimes.
There's no guarantee that the first round player is going to be better, but on odds. And of course, it also depends on the year. Because some years are stacked, and some of the second round, you know, sometimes they're sorting through players who are really good in the third round. I mean, who they know are really good.
Okay.
So anyway, just for the readers out there, the average win shares I had for the first round players in NPB history is 48. For the second round, it's 32. These are over the course of their careers. And 32 would be like adding 10, almost 11 wins to their team's win total.
A one-season win total.
Yeah, but this is over their careers, right? So 48 is like not really a big deal. I mean, if a guy has 48, it's really nothing special. It's not so – they're not guaranteed at all. A lot of first round draft choices never get anywhere. But what happens is the guys who never get anywhere get more and more as you go deeper down in the draft.
Right.
So the 48 win shares average for the first round and 19 for the fourth round. Okay. Now, having looked at that and actually having to task my database to answer that question, I found another thing, which was the number three was the 1996 second round that had Nobuhiko Matsunaka, Hiroki Kuroda, Masahiko Morino, Akinori Iwamura, Yoshitomo Ohtani, a couple other guys, three other guys you would know. In that draft, there were three major leaguers and another who was signed to play in the major leagues but had an injury, never did, and a Triple Crown winner. And then the last one I'll mention was the first round of 1998, which a lot of you will remember. Kosuke Fukudome, Koji Uehara, Daisuke Matsuzaka, Kyuji Fujikawa, and a couple of other guys who had pretty good careers, and one of whom
Fuji-Q.
So those are really the best of the best. But number one is the one Dave picked out. Absolutely. Good job, Dave.
Good job, Dave. And he's such a good source of information for a good resource for the olden days. That's my weak spot is, you know, I came to Japan, I started studying about Japanese baseball, but you have to study the language to proceed in the baseball. So I think both of them went hand in hand, but that is my weakness. I picked up from the late 80s and went on.
Well, Dave said it, you know, he said that I have oodles of time, and I know he was joking, but I actually did have two oodles this week, Dave, and I used both of them to cook omelets for my wife. So.
How sweet. Oh, all right. So, and now the comments. You guys were talking about an expansion in the last show, and I specifically were talking about the player development issues that need to be resolved. I didn't hear you guys ask about what I think is a major problem for farm teams. That's the fact that the two leagues have an odd number of teams, so that on any given day, there can only be a maximum of 10 of the 12 teams that can play official games. I understand the historic reasons why the leagues are set up this way, although honestly, why is Shinichi in the Western League instead of the Eastern League? It's really kind of absurd. Additionally, you guys were talking about how NPB needed to add another lower level of minors. Would that be only for developmental players, or would that include the 70-man roster players? I ask because one of the issues I see for the guys getting playing time is that there's 40-ish guys on the farm team roster instead of the 20-ish that's normal for a minor league team in the States. Adding a third level just for developmental players doesn't get the farm team players any more opportunities to play. Thanks as always for the podcast, Dave. Okay, so yeah, Dave, my idea about these teams, and if you guys aren't sure, if you go on the NPB website, it breaks down the farm system here with seven teams in the Eastern League and five teams in the Western League. And so I understand that that's an issue, and it is weird. Jim, you know why they have an odd number of teams in these leagues.
Sure, because they when the Kintetsu Buffaloes and Oryx Blue Wave merged in 2004, there was one less team in Western Japan. And so they were the Buffaloes were replaced by a team in Sendai. And rather than force one of the Eastern League teams to play in the Western League, or as Dave suggested, have the Dragons move to the Eastern League and have it 8-4. Although there's a thought to that as well. But anyway, the point was just to keep it 7-5. Which points to the next question, which is, why don't they do more?
Yeah.
And I think why don't they do more is a cost.
Yeah, probably. I mean, that's the easiest thing to point to.
I'm not going to come out on the limb and say there are four teams. There are at least four teams with second tier of minors, which we've talked about. And any of the others specifically besides the Giants, Carp, Hawks, and Lions. And having a third team, and they, as Dave pointed out, they have the players. You know, they've got the minor league players even without the Ixei developmental players. They've got the number of players on the roster. What they don't really have is a desire to spend even more money on what for some of these parent companies see as a losing proposition. So Shinichi Dragons, you know who I'm talking about.
Yep. Yeah, I understand. So to get to the situation about the developmental players. So Dave, don't call me out, man. I'm just the idea guy. don't make me delve into the minutiae of the details. That's not what I do. I just throw out great ideas. So anyway, my idea to incorporate some of these independent league teams, or even you could take, it didn't have to be independent league teams. It could have been corporate league teams or anything, but just get a third tier and get, I don't know how you do it. Don't ask me, but my idea was to have not just developmental players, because Dave is asking, is this just for developmental players? No, I mean, you can do whatever you want with your roster. They could be developmental players. You could give them a regular contract. If you think it's a Carter Stewart situation, for example, you get a player from a foreign player, you want to keep him because you think he has some value eventually on the top team, but he's raw. He's maybe really young. So you give him a regular contract, but you put him on your second farm team and he works his way up. It's just like through the system that the U.S. has, that the major leagues have. So, it makes no sense for me to have minor leaguers sitting around and not playing. And so that really should be addressed. And again, if we were running things, I'm not sure about the details on my end, but I would have lots of ideas. I'd have lots of ideas.
I would be like, guys, go play. Go play.
Guys, go play. No, not that bad. But I'm like, yeah, it doesn't make sense. If you've got teams, you've got enough teams, you've got 12 teams, but they're split into 7 and 5 to have some guys sitting around not playing. And a few players we've talked to in the past say when guys get injured, quote unquote injured, and get sent down to the farm team, they're playing. They're supposed to be injured, but they're out there playing. And if there aren't enough games already for some of these young players to get out there and actually develop, and you're sending other guys who are maybe borderline top team players down to the farm to work on stuff, nobody's really getting anything done. In my opinion, if you only send them down there and they get a couple of at-bats and then you put the young player out there for a couple of at-bats, that's not how games are played. You need the 4 at-bats or the entire game. So, it just needs to be fixed. And there are a lot of problems. But, the third-tier teams, I wouldn't limit the contracts at all. If you're a team like SoftBank and you have a bunch of developmental players and you want to give a guy like Carter Stewart a regular contract but put him on the third team, do it.
Lotte Marines were basically told no, you can't a few years ago when they wanted to float a plan to be able to have their minor leaguers play in the Shikoku Island League for the Kochi Fighting Dogs, and that never quite happened. They have an arrangement with them, and I think they'll send players down. They have had an arrangement, and I think it's been strengthened by the fact that they drafted one of the Kochi players who went on to win a batting title in the Pacific League, Katsuya Kakunaka.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always difficult.
Something just came to me, which is the entire baseball world of Japan should be under the umbrella of a Japanese baseball federation that has power. He says jokingly. He says jokingly.
I can just see the people in NPV like peeing themselves laughing.
Right. And it could be NPV. They should give somebody the power and then get all of these baseball entities going in the same direction. I mean, for the longest time, right? The college players couldn't play against minor league teams or whatever, and they finally changed that. Get everybody going in the same direction, in the same book. They don't have to be in the same chapter or on the same page, but get them in the same book and get everything. I mean, right now it seems like you've got some entities on the right side and some on the left side, and they're all going in different directions, and it's not working. It's not working as a unit. And it could be so much better and so much more. And then for that to happen, NPB would have to right itself by fixing this farm team situation and then helping and facilitating all the teams to get that third tier in their organizations and work together. But yeah, I don't see that happening.
No, I mean, for those of you who know Japanese history, I think if the organizers of the Tokugawa shogunate were to look at NPB and the baseball situation here, and they would be in awe of the intricacy and rivalries and jealousies. They were saying, wish we could do that, to sort of like mess things up more. No, it's a historic situation. And Takashi Saito, who's this year the pitching, ostensibly going to be the pitching coach. Well, he is the pitching coach of the Yakult Swallows, and ostensibly they'll have a season. But was telling me last year in March in Arizona that these guys, corporate league players, are getting paid to play baseball. They are essentially professionals. College players are essentially virtually out of the education system. They're essentially being paid to play baseball. There is essentially no difference between any of these levels, but here they are with their little fiefdoms and their little territories. And I'll be honest, it's mostly NPB's fault from back in the Wild West days of the 1960s and then the Wild West days of the 2000s when they were still paying amateur players. So don't forget, we were paying your bills when you weren't supposed to get paid any money so that you would sign with us when you turned pro. You know, that was still going on 12 years ago. So don't be surprised that, you know, there's a feudal system when the NPB owners are acting, like I said, they're acting like feudal warlords.
Right.
As much as I certainly agree with you, there should be a much, the Japan Baseball Federation should be in charge of things, but let's, but yeah, that's a good one. And the people, that'll be my next April Fool's story.
Yeah, put Fantasyland. Disneyland's closed, buddy. There's no Fantasyland is not open right now.
No.
All right. Okay. All right. The next question came via Twitter from Sheen in Toronto. And he says, "Hi, guys. Came across a video about Tomohito Ito. Actually watched it before. He's always been a regret of Katsuya Nomura, the manager. And from footage, the guy was absolutely nasty. How good was he really?"
Yeah, well, he was really good, and I asked him about that, and I didn't expect him to give me such a straight answer. He did a little Coco Valentin on me. He said, like...
You asked Ito before?
Yeah, a couple of years ago when he was the Swallows' number two pitching coach, I said, you know, tell me what happened to your career. He says, it was the pitches, man. It was the pitches. Too many pitches. and I did a research project once that showed how, you know, I looked at how Katsuya Nomura had managed his pitchers when he was manager of the Hawks and when he was manager of the Swallows. And basically he liked veteran guys who could eat up innings, and he liked young pitcher. He was really good at developing young pitchers. And then when the young pitchers became really good, he was really good at using them until they were pretty much used up.
Right.
And Ito got used up really, really quickly, but he did tie the Central League, a longstanding Central League record for strikeouts in a game, 150 pitch complete game, and that he lost. And just an amazing, amazing talent, and a wonderful pitching coach, according to our friend of the podcast, Tony Barnett, and a really great guy. So, we wish him well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you quantify how good was he really was the question, and I'm thinking, well, was he better than so and so? If he'd have had a longer career, you know, would he be in a Hall of Fame?
No, you never know because pitchers do get hurt, and in the normal course of events, but in terms of quality, in you know, like, how brilliant was he shining? You know, how brilliant did he shine at his brightest? He was as good as anybody you've ever seen. I mean, it was just, it's that his pitches were so electric, but what you are working against in that idea is, well, he'll always be good, but it doesn't work like that because people adjust. And his slider was just dynamite. I mean, you know, he had a good fastball and he located, and he had this tremendous slider. But okay, what happens next year when people get a better approach for the slider? Well, they didn't have to because it wasn't as good next year. So we don't know. Right. We can't predict a future, but compared to other players, he would have been, you know, if he had been handled more carefully. But that's the thing with Nomura. You don't really know how much the way he developed pitchers was... There's a chicken and egg, you know, were they great because of how he worked with them to, you know, and how much workload he put on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, or were they good and, you know, and he ruined them. I'm suspect there's a little bit of it's somewhere in between. So he made a lot of young pitchers really, really good. And then, had to kind of get rid of them because they, you know, he wore them out.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is.
Right. And that's the conundrum that managers face in trying to manage through an entire season. And I think that's what we've talked about with Alex Ramirez in terms of him not wanting to overuse any particular pitcher and him trying to spread out the workload and him thinking about that, even though he's not a pitcher. The way he's using pitchers is because he saw so many from the outfield get worn out that he was always determined if he became a manager that he wouldn't do that. But nice that we had a couple of questions this week that didn't create any controversy like last week. Although it was fun, and we did hear from Dragon Soul. He was really happy with the conversation, and
I want to apologize.
No. He said he wasn't clear in the question, but I told Dragon Soul he and I were on the same page, and that I assumed, or I took from all that he had said, that he was talking about defense, and that, you know, with that, when you program Jim Allen to do some research, you have to think of him as a computer. And if you don't tell him exactly what you want, you're going to get something else.
You get something else, indeed. And having said that, because he'd been talking about something else, he included a bit about offense and defense, and so I was thinking,
true.
Okay. So anyway, having said that, and I did tell the listeners last week that there would be a post on my blog about catchers, but it is incomplete, and it's incomplete because I fell down this humongous rabbit hole. Are rabbit holes humongous? Well, it's long and deep, and
it is if you're in it.
Well, that's true enough. Yeah, that'd be one big rabbit hole. You know, I need Lewis Carroll to fix that. But but he's currently on the retired list. So that's coming. I am still working on this project about catchers who had long careers, but.
Okay.
But we're lacking in this respect, and so I'm working on it. So please be patient.
Okay, and we will be patient until next week when we hear from you guys again. We will try. Like I said, I sent my family away, so I've got time now. I can maybe do.
You got oodles. You got 27 oodles.
All right, but we do need you guys to chime in with questions, so please send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com or on Twitter @JBWPodcast. Hit us up there with the hashtag High Heat or on the Facebook page. And like I said, it doesn't have to be a question. It can be a comment. It could be criticism. It can be a request. And do it by MP3 as well. We accept those and keep them to about a minute, and we'll get that on. We will talk to you next week, and hopefully it doesn't rain too much this week and I can get out and run and get some of this therapeutic jogging that I've been doing to decompress as we stay inside. But do stay inside, do wash your hands, and do be safe out there. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your extended off season.
See you safe at home.